The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for the 1989 movie She-Devil. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a devilishly good time or just plain evil? We watched She-Devil from 1989 to see if it was redeemable. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello, and welcome to the very delayed redeeming features cast for She-Devil from 1989. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Well, it's great to be back, Trevor. It feels like it's been a while, let's just say.
Yes. Look, to be straight up honest, we have had some issues with the Rufus Project. We actually had already recorded this one, and then the recording from Skype didn't record. Something went horribly, horribly wrong. I cried. So we actually have to redo this, which would be a very different one because we know what each other thinks, and Christian knows what the next movie is. So, and I've got to tell you, his reaction to the next movie was priceless. So that's probably my biggest regret because that was gold, Christian. Your reaction to that was just amazing.
Well, you know what, Trevor? I should have actually been practicing so I could recapture it as best as I could for this re-recording. So I will do my best, but Yes, folks, you were in for a corker, but, you know, but first things first, She-Devil, deja vu, but I'm glad that we're finally being able to get this down onto a recording for from the general public to hear. So, folks, we've gone into the recordings again to do this just for you because you would have missed out on it. So, Trevor, She-Devil, 1989.
Yeah, it seems to be a bit difficult to do a normal preamble, so I'll just go straight to the synopsis here. So, She-Devil. A cunning and resourceful housewife vows revenge on her husband when he begins an affair with a wealthy romance novelist. Now, to go on to a bit of a turkey trivia for this one, it's rated 5.4 out of 10 on IMDb, so slightly above average. I could not find any information on the budget, but it grossed apparently about $15.3 million. I don't really think it got... it didn't get much of a theatrical release outside of the US, so I guess you don't expect that to be a very big figure.
Yeah, like I may be wrong. I vaguely remember in 1989, I was very young at the time, seeing a poster in our local cinema. But I may be thinking of the video case in the video shop, which is a more likely scenario. And I know the poster, for those who remember, and I know Trevor would probably remember, is the one of Roseanne pretty much attempting to strangle Meryl Streep, and I know that's always the image that's sort of hung around with me since 1989. So it's was good to be able to sit down and watch this movie a few weeks ago, and that's what actually led us to the redeeming features. My group of friends said afterwards, when things started to go a bit strange in the film, they said, "Christian, this would be perfect fodder for redeeming features." And you know what, Trevor, I never miss the opportunity for a challenge like that, so I took them up on the offer. So She-Devil. So it was always this one that I'd known it had existed, but I knew that it was this real black comedy. But I think the first thing that stood out to me was Meryl Streep and Roseanne in a movie. Gosh, this must have been at the time when Roseanne was really at her peak with her TV show, you know, which I believe came out around that time. So I think it was after the first season.
That's right. So it was filmed during the first season break of Roseanne Barr's very popular television sitcom. And another bit of trivia, which goes back to that, you know, all the posters and all the promotion show, like, you know, Roseanne and Meryl, like, back-to-back or strangle each other or in some sort of conflict. But in the entire movie, there's only one major scene at the very, very beginning where they actually have a big scene together. There's a very quick one at the end of the movie as well, But yeah, there's only one really major scene with them playing against each other, and they spend much of the rest of the time in completely different parts of the world.
Yeah, well, that was one thing we noticed when we were watching it as a group. It was almost every scene came up, and you're like, okay, this is a Roseanne scene. Oh, this is a Meryl scene. And yeah, you just wanted them to work together so much because it was such an odd pairing. But, hey, I have heard, you know, through the grapevine, this is only rumour, that that Roseanne is a bit difficult to work with as an actress or as a celebrity. So perhaps it was something to do with that. And Meryl refused to work with her on many scenes. So I don't know. But it did very much feel like the Roseanne show and then the Meryl show. So quite interesting there. But it was actually based on a book. I don't have the name of it. I think it's the, you'll know, Trevor.
I just know it was a novel by Faye Weldon. I don't know if it was Life and Times of Bushido.
Yeah, that was it, I think.
That.
Yeah, I was thinking Nine Those Lives of Bushido, yeah. But that's a totally different thing.
Yeah. But apparently the director, Susan Seidelman, didn't actually realise that there'd already been a very highly regarded BBC adaptation of the novel already done until she was well into production of this movie.
And so really changing it to, well, not changing it, but making it a comedy sort of makes you, I don't know, it's an interesting way to take the tale when, you know, as you said, it, you know, you can see the way that the thriller or the TV series would have really captured that evil revenge side, which is what I thought it was going to be like going into the movie. I thought it was going to deal more with that than sort of what we see as sort of, I don't know, empowerment to Roseanne, but, you know, we'll get to that. But, and as a result, it came over very campy, any of the thriller elements, because they were doing that sort of black humour or black comedy. So, yeah, it was an interesting choice to change the genre of the source material.
Yeah, especially because the last bit of trivia I've got here with regards to Meryl Streep, in the lead-up to this movie, she was actually widely criticised and questioned on whether or not she could do comedy. So, obviously, even in the lead-up to this, once it became a known that this was being made and it was going to be Meryl Streep along with Roseanne Barr, there was a big question mark because up to this point, I think Meryl was considered much more a dramatic actress.
She was definitely the Academy Award-winning actress that you think would never step down or step, I suppose, sideline to be in a movie like this. But it was also that really interesting phase in her career where it sort of was that her dramatic, even though she still does dramatic roles now, but going from sort of dramatic actress to that kind of comedy period. Because a couple of years later, she did Death Becomes Her with Goldie Hawn, which is very, very similar to She-Devil in its whole style. And Meryl pretty much plays the same kind of character, actually. But then you've got the next period of Meryl's career where she sort of is now as this great character actress. So it sort of was that in between sort of that awkward phase where, yeah, she was able to cross over into comedy and has been able to, you know, do comedy since, you know, in some rare cases. But yeah, so it was interesting to see her in this movie. But, you know, I mentioned Death Becomes Her, but wow, yeah, very similar to that, even though this was, I think, about 4 or 5 years beforehand. So it was still very much drenched in the 80s, I think, this film.
Well, what we should do is move on, and we need our baseline. We need to see what we're working with and what we can build upon. So what I've done is headed to that wonderful site, Amazon, which has so many reviews on it, and I've dug up this one to get us going. Now, the one-star reviews were all quite brief, so I think this one really sums it up. The title is Meh. And the review is, I watched 10 minutes of it. That should tell you how bad this was. 1 star.
Which is quite interesting because, you know, it's one of those films that actually in the first 10 minutes so much happens and it establishes so much that, yeah, I find it interesting that they'd want to turn that off. But, as you say, everyone's entitled to their opinion and it can only possibly go up from here.
Yeah, well, I was already annoyed with Ed Begley Jr. within the first 10 minutes of this movie. So, that could be
very out of place and not necessarily the guy you'd expect to play that kind of leading role, especially the sort of guy that these women are possibly, you know, even someone like Meryl Streep was fawning all over.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Meryl character, it was very strange. I mean, she kind of started off with this very, very aloof, very breathy sounding sort of voice when they did the whole lifestyles of the rich and famous gag to go along there. And I remember that when back in the day, I remember that everyone used to make fun of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and everyone got the jokes about the Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, but no one would actually admit to watching it. But then as soon as, like, Ed Begley Jr., Bob, I believe, yep, Bob, as soon as he showed any interest in her, she was immediately, like, you know, completely sucking in there. So I guess there was a kind of a, you know, I don't know if they were trying to imply that, that Bob was really this highly appealing character, but, you know, to women, but obviously we got to see both sides of his character with his interactions and his rather dismissive attitudes towards Roseanne as well.
And the thing is too, like, you know, most of the times when he had relations with women over the course of the film, it was either a, you know, a situation where he's just picked the easy target, let's just say, or the person that's possibly setting him up, as we see in the second side of the movie when the revenge plays out with all the group of women. But yeah, you were saying about Meryl Streep, but I was thinking it was almost harking back to Mummy Dearest from a few podcasts ago with the whole, with the way she played, with the way she played it very much, you know, especially even later in the film when I'm drumming ahead, where she chucks a bit of a tantrum in front of the kids. You know, it was like part Mummy Dearest, part, yeah, lifestyles of the rich and famous. So I, yeah, I found her, I thought it would be annoying, but yeah, I found that I got used to it, you know, the very breathy tone. I was at the start, I'm going, oh gosh, you know, can you get some, get some tone in your voice? But yeah, you did get used to it, by the end of the movie or by halfway through.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, her, I think, yeah, that was the thing about, Meryl's character, Mary, in, is that, that, you know, she actually almost had different personas for different things. Like, she was very, very breathy during, like, interviews and public appearances where she's playing this author, but then, like, she's very, like, melodramatic around the home, and then later on in the movie where she finally gets fed up and starts taking charge, you get to see a whole new side again, but all rather gloriously overacted by Meryl Streep. But yeah, it was very annoying at start, but I did find myself warming to her performance as the movie progressed.
I think, you know, the whole overdramatic thing, it really fitted in with that whole campy feel, which is what the entire movie has. Like, you only need to look at some of the lighting, for example. There's shots of Roseanne sitting, you know, her husband is just being terrible to her at the dinner table, and, you know, and later on she's plotting to, you know, take revenge, and of course he's pretty much, you know, in semi-dark, and she's sitting there with basking in this lightning-type blue lighting over her face. Very horror movie. So it was definitely picking up that campy tone, and I noticed that a lot throughout the movie. So, you know, you had Roseanne sort of shown in a campy way in that respect, you know, as an actual she-devil, and then you've got Meryl Streep, yeah, her version being this very over-the-top caricature.
And it kind of, I don't think it could quite make up its mind which character it wanted to be the good character, because you've got Roseanne, who's just messing everything up, spilling wine, dropping food, being a bad cook, but then at the start of the movie, she's also narrating what's going on. She's providing this voiceover, and it's a very, I suppose, steady performance from her. So when you compare it to Meryl's extravagances with performances, it's just quite a contrast. And that narration, I've got to admit, that narration confused me a bit. It didn't really seem entirely necessary to explain what was going on, because what was being shown in the movie was not that complex.
Oh, exactly. And when you hear the type of tone that she was using too, where she was almost, you know, yeah, pretty much reading, like she's reading a story to the audience, you know, it almost needs to have a beginning and an end. She sort of did the narration for the first 5 minutes and we never really heard about it again. So, and that was a, you know, that was a bit of a shame. But as you said, you know, visually, yep, we were seeing a beauty shop where all these women were getting made up, and you've got Roseanne with her fake moles, you know, going, oh, I want to be made up too. You don't need to say this with a voiceover or narration. So it may have been something that stemmed from the book adaptation. It could have been, I don't know, the opening paragraph, and they thought they had a need to use it. I don't know.
But then, like, yeah, you say it's heavy on the narration at the beginning. Then there's a couple of random bits of narration during it, so it's not even used consistently throughout the movie, which seems to make it even less necessary.
An insult to our intelligence as much too, sort of, you know, like, oh, in case the audience has either fallen asleep or lost track, we better tell them what's happening.
Well, maybe they were banking more on the Roseanne audience than the Meryl audience to actually go to the movie. So maybe there's a little sign of what the director thought the level that the Roseanne audience would have been at.
Yeah, definitely. But there was definitely a lot of all those sort of, you know, campy, you know, quite scenes. You know, you've got kids, you know, I've got a note here about, you know, when they're at the shops, the kid goes along the line at the shops and bursts all the milk. And then there's a scene where, you know, like Roseanne trips over and the tray of food lands on her husband, but not one bit of food moves whatsoever, even though it's dramatically, like, spun all through the roof, through the sky and landed in his hand. So, yeah, as campy as anything. Real tongue-in-cheek, but then by the second half of the movie, it started to change its tone, I think, where it kind of became, okay, it's not going to become just a movie about revenge, it's going to become one sort of, I suppose, about empowerment, but, you know, you were seeing sort of different sides to the Roseanne character, and you sort of weren't really knowing which one they were settling on.
Yeah, because, I mean, like at one point early on, after a failed dinner, for Bob's parents, and it all goes wrong. The food gets spilled everywhere. There's the family gerbil is dead inside the mushroom soup, and he just calls her a shoe devil. And it cuts to like her with a bit of flame around her and stuff like that. But you know, she's the one who's being cheated on by this complete asshat. Who then proceeds to just absolutely lay it on her, like verbally, and sort of uses it as the excuse he needs to get out and move in with the author Mary, and you're thinking, oh, hang on, he's the one who's obviously not good in this scene, yet you're still trying to portray Roseanne. Probably use the character name, should I? Shouldn't I? Ruth, at this stage, trying to portray her as this devilish character, but all she's done is try to do the right thing by him, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. She, you know, he calls her a she-devil, and so she decides to be, you know, that's what is his motivation for her devilish revenge plot.
And that's pretty much what I was, you know, going into this movie, that was what I was envisaging the whole film to set it up for, to her to have this revenge and happy ending, you know, that's why it was very much sort of only happened in the first half. But yeah, so she sort of goes on from this into a house rampage where she, you know, puts the dryer under the pillow and starts burning all the feathers and puts, you know, aerosol cans or spray paint in the microwave. And then a very creative special effect of her walking away as the house is exploding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it was 1989.
I know, but that said, even if there were better techniques available, I still think it fitted in with the tone of the film as well, that real sort of campy comic book, you know, black comedy. But I don't know, I think it would have actually been the limitations of budget.
Quite possibly. And then, yeah, after that explosion, that's when we get some more narration from Roseanne, where she explains and she basically summarizes the four things that Bob said that a man expects and needs. And she makes the list, and we're getting a narration over the top of that to kind of explain what we're seeing anyway. It was so not necessary.
Oh, I know, and especially when you do have a list with four different things written down that she's obviously going to tick off or cross off, yeah, you don't really need to be explaining what we're seeing. So, yeah, it was a bit of an insult to the intelligence of the audience. Or, as I said earlier, maybe they were worried that they'd be asleep by now.
Or they just felt that, you know, again, the opinion of what the audience would be was low for the director and production company. But yeah, from there, it is a bit of a change of pace as Roseanne, or Ruth, now calling herself Rose, heads off to the nursing home where Meryl Streep's mother is living.
Oh, gosh, this scene. The scene that seemed to, and this is one thing we noticed when we were watching as a group, you know, this is a scene that seemed to go for almost 20 minutes or more, that was this probably the biggest setup in film history, I think, just for very little payoff. And the film managed to take a fork in the road that I didn't think it was going to. Thought it was going to start turning buddy film or something, buddy road trip movie.
Mm. Yeah, that was all very strange because, yeah, they do go through a very extended situation. She gets there, all the oldies in the nursing home are virtually comatose. She swaps out their medication. I thought it was multivitamins, but since we recorded last time, I actually came across a thing which implied that she was actually basically giving the oldie speed.
That's even more funny now. So I can see now why the other nurse wasn't too impressed.
Well, I don't think the other nurse really knew because she snuck down in the middle of the night and swapped out one lot of tablets for another lot of tablets. And next thing we see is her refereeing a soccer game with the oldies being quite active. Which I quite like that scene, but yeah, like I said, it was all part of this huge extended setup
that was essentially going to wipe out the different things on her list. And for, you know, you knew that it was going to be okay. She wants to, you know, move her mum out to end up living with to move Mary Fisher's mum out so she'll end up living with Mary. But yeah, the setup and the whole thing of pretty much, you know, that it's very frowned upon to wet the bed in this particular retirement village. I'm sure it's probably the same in most. I don't know. I know it can't be helped in most cases. But yeah, I don't know. Roseanne plots to pretty much simulate that on the bed of Mary's mother to get her kicked out of the home. So yeah, so something that could have possibly been done in much shorter time had this big setup. But it did also result in her forming the friendship with, I'm not sure what the character's name was, Linda Hunt's character, you know, as one of the the nurses, and they sort of buddy
nurse,
up. And...
Yeah, Nurse Hooper.
Oh, that was it. So they sort of buddy up, and you think, okay, the film's going to take sort of a different turn now, especially as she makes her way down the list, and that's when she sort of decides to, you know, pretty much... I think from memory, Dr. Hooper had a lot of money saved because she'd never really done anything with it. So, you know, that was pretty much... I don't know if that was Roseanne almost preying on someone that had all this money. It was quite a strange thing.
Yeah, and that's when, you kind of didn't mind what she was doing with the oldies because it seemed like quite a positive move, unless she was actually using speed, in which case it's slightly more horrifying.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, she finds out about Hooper's money stash and you know, really does everything she can to befriend Hooper, shares her donuts and stuff with her, to the point where when she finally leaves, Hooper goes with her, and she then uses Hooper's money so that they can buy an abandoned building in the middle of a city. So, and then... completely refurbish it. So you can imagine that was all coming out of Nurse Hooper's bank account. Nothing was coming from Rose at that point.
Yeah, unless she was kind of thinking on her end, maybe Ruth was thinking maybe that, you know, she was possibly empowering Dr. Hooper by making her do this. But it was sort of, I know that the aim was for the women of the town that had been sort of downtrodden and had bad things happen to them. But yeah, it did seem to happen very quickly. And then I think one of the worst montages in movie history in terms of them refurbishing the place. It all happened very quickly, didn't it? And not very well edited together.
The fast-paced comical cleanup montage. Yeah, we don't need those.
It was so cringeworthy. But anyway, they ended up getting it done up using probably every cent of Dr. Hooper's money. Whoa, that place was pretty dirty when they got to start it.
Yeah, and when they decide to distribute flyers for the Rose Employment Agency or whatever it was in order to try to get those downtrodden women onto their books, they basically stood on top of the building and threw the flyers into the wind. And I'm thinking... That's not very efficient.
Exactly. And I also know from having tried to do something like that similar, it's not actually very illegal and you get into a bit of trouble doing stuff like that. So I don't know, but it obviously seemed to work in the She-Devil universe because next thing she's got pretty much half the women of New York, I think, where it's set. And it's quite convenient because a lot of those get placed in jobs in certain places that'll end up being quite relevant to plot developments later on in the movie. So it's all very convenient. So it is very much showing how Roseanne is trying to be very manipulative upon all these people. It's sort of making me think about it in a different light as I'm saying it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then, because, you know, by this stage, you know, we've had more glorious overacting by Meryl Streep and Bob, who had gotten to, I suppose, a comfortable position with Mary, decides that, you know, he needs to start womanizing again. And, of course, Roseanne's there ready. She gets the most bimbo-ish of the girls she's got signed up at her employment agency, and after dropping a flyer with a very sexy lady on it off at Bob's office, make sure that this woman gets employed, because she knows exactly what Bob's going to do. And sure enough, Bob cracks on to this girl and starts a relationship with her. And, you know, because all the time, this Olivia, who I do feel very sorry for, is reporting every detail back to Rose.
And yeah, she's pretty much being used in the process, because I suppose she'd ended up losing her job and everything that Roseanne had managed to, I suppose, get, which you think to yourself, did Roseanne even actually get it in the first place? Was it even a position? So yeah, it seemed very much this Olivia character was very used and abused. But it was a weird mentality with the film. I think there's a line, I think Bob actually says it, I've got the quote here, "Men don't want wives, they want lovers." I think that's from him. And it sort of was a weird mentality with the film. It was like, you know, Bob was just wanting to pretty much to philander around and you know, as you said before, as soon as he kind of got settled with Meryl, he was out of there. But then you've also got on the other side of it these women that sort of want this domestic lifestyle. It was like Meryl, after Roseanne does one of her revenge things, which is leaving their children at Mary's house, you know, you see that Mary starts to become very domestic, and it's almost like it's, yeah, so from one side it's men wanting to pretty much just, you know, use and abuse women, and then women that are wanting to become housewives. It was quite a strange moral, I suppose, to the story.
I don't think we can say that Meryl really wanted to. She was more like forced to, because the hired help just wasn't interested in looking after the kids and pretty much left them to her own devices. So we get, you know, some shots of Meryl being hilariously bad at housework.
Yeah, and, did you notice the bit where she puts the cling wrap in the washing machine? Did you know what that was supposed to mean?
No, I've got no idea. I think it was just because it was to show that she had no idea what she was doing.
Okay, I thought so. I thought maybe I was reading too much into it, but yeah, maybe that is the case. But then you also see too how much that domestic lifestyle ends up having a reflection on her work, because she then starts to release, what is it, Love in the Rinse Cycle, which is where she pretty much, you know, talks about domestic life, but she's also a romance novelist, and it sort of crosses over in a very awkward term, so that it does very much sabotage her career, which I suppose, you know, being a revenge film, I suppose, if you look at it that way, Roseanne would have, you know, got her just deserves, or got what she wanted.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of Roseanne getting what she wanted, well, go back to poor Olivia, who, yeah, so she's having an affair with Bob, and she's gushing to Rose about how wonderful Bob is, and she's sitting there, and Rose goes, "You should totally tell him that you love him. You know, he'll go absolutely. You know, he'll be totally on with that, and it'll be amazing." And then, of course, off Olivia goes and tells Bob that she loves him, and immediately gets dumped and fired. In a rather sudden and very traumatic for her. I mean, I think it's probably one of the most, one of the better performances in the movie is just, you know, this poor woman who's been ruthlessly used by Rose in an effort to put her in a position where she'll let Rose into the office so that they can get onto Bob's computer to, not only find out that he's been doing a little bit of fraud on the side, not a big lot, but so they can just make sure he gets caught for something really, really big by transferring a lot of money into Bob's Swiss bank account from one of his clients. I believe it was actually from Jackie Collins' account that came up on that computer.
Oh, that's right. But then that all sort of stems, I think a lot of all this sort of was unfolding sort of during the court case, which I think is another thing where one of the other staff members that think it was at Vera Rose or whatever the company is that Roseanne has, that the employment agency, she's got one of the girls who conveniently works at the courthouse and is able to change the lawyer who will be, or the judge who will be presiding over the case for that day. So it's all very convenient, all very strategic, and all very much to go Roseanne's way.
Absolutely. And I think that's really what, you know, because especially like in this, like that final third of the movie, she is so manipulative and she literally is using everybody. You've got Hooper, you've got Olivia, you've got the woman at the courts who gets rid of the judge who's sympathetic towards white collar crime to bring in this absolutely stony faced a black American woman who is just not going to accept any of it. And I think that really undermines the sympathy they want us to feel for Roseanne as the wronged party at the start of the movie.
Yeah.
They really, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like they didn't know whether they wanted her to be the victim or the revengeful she-devil, this monster or this villain, you know, this horror movie villain. So and as a result, it was hard to know, where the tone. That, I think that really altered the tone of the movie overall as well, not really knowing what it wanted to be.
Yeah, because I mean they would sporadically cut back to Roseanne and they'd give her like red eyes or put her in that you know horror movie lighting or have some flames around her, and it's just like, hang on, is she meant to be the one that we're rooting for, getting her revenge, but like about the same time as Roseanne is just mercilessly crushing Olivia for her own needs, she sends off some photocopies of Olivia's butt with Bob's ring clearly holding onto a butt cheek to Meryl, and at that point Meryl like completely changes character and just basically goes, okay, fine, I've had enough, I'm the boss, and she storms in and she starts taking charge. And at that point I was rooting for Meryl. It was just like, that was such a strong positive scene. It almost overshadowed a lot else of what's happening in the movie.
Yeah, because it's so much it's sort of been piled on top of her leading up to that point. Because even though it's very much a revenge film about, you know, Bob getting his comeuppance, I suppose, you know, it was very much Meryl was piled on with all this stuff with her, you know, her book not going well, you know, the kids coming to live with her, and I think, you know, and her can't call him a maid, her manservant who doesn't seem to ever do any work. So she sort of has a bit of a bad time. And as you said, yeah, by that stage, you're sort of starting to root for her because you've seen that Ruth is such a sort of quite an evil character. But I suppose we knew what we were signing up for with the movie She-Devil. But yeah, you wanted someone like her to be a bit more sympathetic.
Indeed. But then... like even during the lead up to the court case, and like the final straw is when she finds out that one of the clients that Bob had been skimming the top off was her. It's like that was the point where she finally just went, nope, that's enough. So in a way, and then she ends up writing a book, another book. I suppose inspired by the real life events of what's happening and how she got ripped off by this guy, and that ends up being a bestseller. So in a way, it's almost like both of them get their revenge on Bob and come out on top while he ends up going to prison.
Yeah, and it's a really weird, it's a really weird ending too, because when he goes to prison you find out, I think it was trying to establish that he had friends in prison, but, you know, there was that scene, you know, with him, you know, cooking in the kitchen and all that sort of stuff, burning the food or something, and you just thought the movie, where's the movie going now? And then it sort of abruptly ends, but that was trying to tie up sort of his story and showing, I suppose, that things weren't going too well for him in prison.
Yeah, it was doing that, but then it cuts to him meeting with the kids outside and implies that it had been quite some time, and it's like, you know, oh, I'm going to be getting out soon, and he's giving the kids cookies that he's baked, and he's there and says, hey, look, once I get out, do you mind if I come over, Ruth, and I'll cook you guys dinner. And it's like, you know, he's a much more mellow and calm guy. So it's, I think it's kind of also kind of implying like it's a happy ending all round because, you know, Bob got his comeuppance, but it's made him a better person.
Yeah, he didn't exactly, yeah, he didn't remain unchanged. He actually became a changed man. So I think, yeah, I suppose when you look at it that way, all three characters managed to, yeah, come out on top. Well, you know, obviously he, as you said, he got his comeuppance as well. So, yeah, so in that respect, but it just seemed to end quite messily and sort of with the whole Roseanne walking off with her, all my sisters are doing it for themselves, you know, with all the women from the employment agency, you know, being very empowered. And I think at that point is when the narration, I think, comes in one last time. I don't know. But she has that, her second scene. Wow. You know, you've been waiting the whole movie for this. Her second scene with Meryl Streep when she goes into the bookshop to get the book signed. But of course, they had to add one last little ding with her eyes turning red. Oh, it's like, did they have
to? That was so... That was just not necessary. It's like, come on, guys. You've actually kind of wrapped up with everyone in a positive spot, and then you finish with red-eyed Roseanne.
It's, I just it's think like, it was so, it was yeah. such a roller coaster in terms of tone in that respect. So it was like it was trying to live up to its VHS cover or its movie poster where, you know, she's pretending to strangle Meryl Streep and they're like, oh, whoops, we better throw some more black comedy touches in. So, you know, but, you know, you managed to get through the movie, you know, a lot easier than some of the others we've watched. So, but yeah, true, so true. We got, then, to, yeah. got to the end. Go, sorry.
But then after Red-Eyed Roseanne and the closing credits, we end up with probably one of the worst cover versions of I Will Survive I think I've ever heard.
Ooh, or maybe even one of the worst cover versions of a song of all time. And I think it was actually the second time they'd used it in the movie. I think it was used earlier in a montage as well. So, oh god, yeah, it's cringeworthy.
Terrible, terrible song. Anyway, that's got us to the final credits. Considering this is the second time we chatted about this, I actually think we came up with some different points this time, as well as repeating some of the stuff we said last time. So even as a repeat for us, the redeeming features remains, podcast remains, you know, still unpredictable and quite lively.
And the good thing is it's also been a while. It feels like it's been a while since we watched the movie, so it is actually all coming back to me as we talk about it. So it's still a refresher. So, no, it's been good. And, yeah, there's many different things that I've thought about that I wasn't thinking before. So you never know.
Very well. We'll see if the outcome's any different. I'm suspecting it may not be, but we'll see what happens. And as per tradition, since you picked the movie, I shall go first with my redeeming/irredeeming features, if I may.
No worries.
Okay, well, I mean, look, seriously, probably the first thing I say about this is I definitely got a few good laughs out of it. There were some extended scenes where just not enough was happening, or, yeah, there was a lot of awkward setups to a lot of the gags, but the gags that did land were good. So, you know, I laughed enough to have a good time. And Meryl Streep overacting, as always, is very entertaining. She is so good at overacting. despite the excessive exposition from Roseanne, she carried the role fairly well. But yeah, when compared to Meryl Streep's performance, they were worlds apart. Like I said before, it did drag in parts, but that helped the good bits stand out. Yeah, as we just said, it was so not necessary to add all the devil imagery to Roseanne. You know, she's kind of portrayed as a good guy in the movie. Well, they try to, despite her rather horrible ruthlessness with a lot of what she does. But even the trailer itself really focuses on her being like this vengeful, devilish creature. And yeah, if I never hear that cover of I Will Survive again, I will be very, very happy. Overall, though, Christian, like I said, I enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed the performances. I had a good time. So, really, I've got to say, this movie is redeemable.
I'm trying to act surprised here, Trevor, but I kind of knew, and it's good to know that your opinions haven't swayed in the last week since we recorded it. So, I respect a lot of those things, and I actually agree with a lot of that stuff as well. So She-Devil from 1989, I almost feel like by choosing it, was it a good idea? Was it a bad idea? Is it a sort of movie that needed this? But I think it was actually the second half of the movie and the fact that the ending... Look, essentially, I didn't like the ending. I didn't feel like it tied up as well as it should have, especially with those scenes in the prison. And then the next thing, as I said, you've got sort of Roseanne walking off into the distance with all of her sisters, I suppose. And that, as a result, made it feel kind of underwhelming. And because, you know, as I said, the tone of the film was so up and down, like a roller coaster, you felt very much like if it had maintained a lot of that, even if it had maintained that campy tone, or, you know, fair enough, do the flames and do the red eyes, but have it go throughout the whole thing and make it sort of feel that comic strip sort of campy tone or black comedy tone. So that was one thing I didn't like. And I think it was the ending or the second half of the movie which made me and my friends go, maybe this is a redeeming features movie. But obviously, we're looking at the film as a whole, and being able to step back, I did appreciate, you know, its tongue-in-cheekness, and I knew that it, you know, it quite worked as a black comedy. The fact it's been adapted from a thriller piece, which essentially could go the angle of, I don't know, a woman that possibly is mentally insane. I don't know. I would be interested to see the to read the book and see the original series, but I know with this one they've definitely gone the campy angle. I know I shouldn't compare it, but not as good as a movie, say, like Death Becomes Her. I definitely think that's a much better film of the same sort of genre, that also starring Meryl Streep. But, you know, She-Devil 1989, I actually think, Trevor, I am going to say it is a redeemable film. I wouldn't say it's huge, but it's a movie that I minorly liked. So, and yeah, it is definitely redeemable. So we have managed to redeem a film unanimously.
And that means we have got our first agreed, fully agreed, 100% redeemable movie of 2016.
Oh, it's only taken half the year, but woohoo! So I'm glad. I'm glad I was able to choose it. So I don't know. It can only possibly go up or down from here, Trevor. So you do realise you've got some pressure. It's all in your hands now.
Yeah, well, first off, you're skipping ahead there, Christian.
I am too.
Because, you know, we found it redeemable, it had its issues, but you know what, this movie does have its serious fans.
Mm.
And I've dug up another review from Amazon, which I think focuses on a particular character that we only touched on, that might have been this person's favourite. The title of this review is, She Was a Teenage Tramp. If there's one thing this movie has, it is unforgettable one-liners. The ridiculous pairing of Roseanne with Meryl Streep as dueling women for the affection of the ever-sleazy Ed Begley Jr. is one of the most fabulous combinations ever. With support from Sylvia Miles, who plays Meryl Streep's crazy sadistic mother, She-Devil easily becomes one of the best comedies of all time. 5 stars.
Well, there you go. That person sounds like quite a big fan of the film. So, you know, so they've taken it to a different extreme than we have. So, you know, they are out there.
Indeed they are. But to continue on where you tried to jump ahead before, we do need to look at the next podcast. And yes, Christian, it is my turn to pick. I've got to admit, I did consider giving you an out so that we could have a fresh reaction from you, but I'm afraid it's still topical to cover a movie whose sequel is in the movie is at the cinemas at the moment. So I'm not going to try to build it up this time. It seems no point. We're going to head to 2014 and check out Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it's going to be our first redeeming features movie that's done by Michael Bay.
Ooh, I could hear. It's hard to say that. I could hear you stumbling over saying that. Oh gosh, I know when you know. I know we haven't captured it, but oh my gosh, Trevor, this is. Let's just say I've been avoiding those Michael Bay and Ninja Turtles movies as much as I possibly could, because to me, the 1990 live action film is the final word about Ninja Turtles. Actually, I don't mind even the first three. I think we did one, the third one for the redeemable features, and found it redeemable. So I have very fond memories of that series from my childhood. So I'm not really ready for Michael Bay to ruin that. So, Trevor, something that I wanted to avoid.
You never know. It, yeah.
You never know. I might love it.
You never know. We could have an enjoyable him experience.
So I'm yes, I'm prepared to do it just for the redeeming features, but yes, it was something I was going to avoid for the rest of my life if possible. But I am up for the challenge. We've probably done worse.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to do that to say that until I've actually seen this movie. So there we go. We have our first redeemable movie for the year. I am so proud of that. It's taken so long. It's been a hard slog, really. We've come close, I think, a couple of times, but you know, there's always been one of us who hasn't quite been able to match the other's enthusiasm through some of the other films this year. So I'm so very, very happy to report that you know, we've got a tick.
Yes, I'm glad.
We managed to redeem one.
I'm glad I chose well. And thank you.
Now we...
I was going to say thank you for my friends who suggested that we do this film too. So I'll have to tell them that we actually found it redeemable. So that's good news as well.
Thank you very, very much. And we shall now see if we can continue that with a Michael Bay... Oh, so hard to say that name. Movie... Fuzzy can say that I'm not confident, but that might be a good thing. If I go in with very low expectations, maybe I will find something to enjoy. I'm going to cry. My God, what am I doing?
I'm prepared for it, Trevor, and we will do it, and I'm sure we will live to tell the tale. But yeah, I'm not happy, but it needs to... Okay, it's been chosen now.
Absolutely. It's locked in. That's how it goes. And again, look, everyone out there, thank you for your patience. I do apologize for the delay in getting this podcast out to you. Like I said, we had a number of technical issues. If you've been keeping an eye on our homepage, rufusproject.com, I've been trying to put up updates on the site there. So by the time you hear this, it will be fully live, up and operational with a number of improvements. So, we're taking what was not very good and making something better out of it. You may also hopefully hear that Christian is a lot more clearer in this podcast as we've made some changes to our recording arrangements as well. So improvements all round. I think things going haywire may have actually ended up being a good thing.
Yes. I'm glad that we were able to move. I'm glad we were able to move into 2016. Oh, I was anyway, so I'm glad I'm sounding a lot clearer.
Fantastic. And of course, we would love to hear from you. Do you think we were too harsh on She-Devil? Do you think we were too generous? Do you have any redeeming features for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014? We would love to hear from you. Do you perhaps even have a movie that you would like to challenge us with? I know the last challenge we did prior to She-Devil didn't go too well with old Mary Riley getting a resounding irredeemable. But, you know, we're willing to try again. So it's super duper easy to get in touch with us. Of course, you can head to our shiny new homepage, rufusproject.com. And leave a comment below this very episode. You can send us an email to therufusproject@gmail.com, or you can find The Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook and leave a comment there. We would love to hear from you.
Fantastic. Always a pleasure, Trevor, and I always enjoy hearing what we can come up with.
Absolutely. So, Christian, thank you very much. And, yeah, just a final woohoo, redeemed!
Yay! Let's just hope it can continue. But with using the Michael Bay film, could be debatable, but we'll wait and see what happens.
It's going to be a challenge. Chat to you then.
Fantastic. Thanks, Trevor. Chat then.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm BB, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Oh, boy.